Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and on today's show, we're going to take a little peek back into history. I have got two people on the show that are going to talk about our quilting heritage and what their role is in antique quilts and the quilts of today. So the first guest I have on is Barbara Brackman. Barbara is a historian and a quilter. And if you have benefited from her work and her research, if you have made even one quilt in your life. And I'm just so excited to have Barbara come on and tell us a little bit about how she got started and the kind of things she's working on now. So hi, Barbara. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
Ah, this is so exciting to have you on here to chat.
Well, you're very nice. I'm glad to be here. I like to talk about quilt history.
Oh, I know. The quilt history is just fabulous. Now, Barbara, I'd like to get everybody sort of up to date on, you know, how you got into the history part of learning about quilts. You know, what compelled you to jump into to being a historian?
I'm just a person who likes to have my ducks in a row, you know, and I, many years ago, I was going to make quilts, and I thought, well, what patterns do I want to make? And so I thought, well, I'll make an index card with the pattern on it. This is way before computers. And pretty soon, I wasn't making quilts, I was just making index cards. I got fascinated by the patterns and their names and when they were published. And it turned into a book, and then it turned into a computer program.
Ah, so, you know, how many cards, do you even know how many index cards you did before
you,
like?
Yeah, I I have a little measuring thing, you know, how many per inch, and I still have those cards. I think they're 4,000 cards.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Barbara, 4,000.
You know, it's crazy. It's crazy behavior. But I enjoyed it so much. And that was when I was teaching school, a real stressful job teaching little kids. And I'd come home at night, and I could put those index cards in neat little rows.
It was a little bit therapeutic, was it, to just
it
sort of...
It was very therapeutic. And I'd plan, you know, for the next quilt I was going to make. And I've made a lot of quilts. But my intention was to make a quilt in every pattern. And just like Carrie Hall, who did the same thing in the 30s. But, well, maybe I can't do that. Maybe a block in every pattern. And then I thought, well, maybe an index card in every pattern. So I got about 4,000 or 5,000 of them done.
Oh, my gosh. And then Barbara, you at some point decided after you've, you know, collected all this that maybe you were learning a little bit, I imagine.
Well, yes. Well, I learned a lot about pattern. I did. But then the next thing that happened is I thought, well, how old are the quilts and the patterns? You know, I would look at the quilt, two or three quilts in the same pattern, and I thought, well, one must be older or newer. And then I started thinking, well, I better learn about fabric and how to date quilts. And then that became the next obsession.
You just go from one thing to the next, don't you, Barbara?
I do. And it's, you know, it's the kind of person I am. And, you know, I could have devoted my life to other things, but just getting all those little facts in order. And now I probably have 5,000 pieces of fabric, little swatches of fabric, which are all neatly organized in notebooks according to their dye, for example, turkey red or chrome yellow.
That's really neat.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. It's like reading a book. I just love looking through there. Mm. So I'm just the kind of person who likes to organize things, and it doesn't really matter what it is.
What it ends up being.
You just stay away from me. I'll try to organize you.
Well, that would be fine. I probably could use a little organization, Barbara. So tell me how you went about putting your index cards into a book, because, you know, your book of all the blocks and their history is like the Bible of people looking for quilt blocks. You know, that's how I started out. All my friends have it.
Really? I'm glad to hear that. But, you know, when I started, and this is in the 70s, there was no self-publishing or very little. Mm-hmm. And no one was interested in publishing a book like that. It was terribly, terribly obscure, and it would be, there'd be a lot of pages. So I did it myself, and it was just when photocopy machines came in, and I remember I got an electric typewriter, and I could kind of justify the edges of the type, and it looked so professional. So for many years, I did it, published it myself, kept, you know, many in the attic, and did it in a notebook. There were eight different volumes, I think, to put all 4,000 or 5,000 patterns. And then about 1980, as quilting got more, more people were interested, and I think the audience got a little more sophisticated, I was approached by American Quilter Society, asked if they could publish it, and I was thrilled because, you know, I did not want a story. You can't imagine how many pages there were everywhere. So they published it, and I think it's about 19, in the 80s anyway, but now it's out of print. And the thing is, it's a, you know, it's technology that's sort of like Stone Age. It's about 550 pages.
Right, right. It's a big book because you also did pieced and appliqué that you could find.
Yes,
so.
And I did the appliqué, too. I did it about 1990. And it's a lot smaller, thank goodness. But so the appliqué is still in print, and CMT did that one. But I don't know that we'll ever put the paper, 550 pages, back in print. It just is, you know, how many trees?
Right.
So I, about 1990, the Electric Quilt Company approached me and said, did I want to digitize it? Mm-hmm. And so that is sort of, I think, the way it's going to go in the future is it's going to be a digital thing. But you can print it out, you know, you can always print it out for yourself if you want a certain area. And that is actually out of print, too. It was called Blockbase.
Right.
But they revised it because as computers change, you have to keep updating the operating system. So that'll be out, I think, in August again, a new version of that.
Okay, so Electric Quilt is going to go ahead and republish Blockbase, which also went out of print and or out of, you know, being able to be bought. Okay, so cool. So how many are going to be in Blockbase, do you know?
Well, she said 5,000. And I think she's been Penny, my friend Penny, has been adding to it. She likes to put things in her decks in a row, too. So I haven't seen the new version, but I noticed on the cover it says 5,000. So.
Okay. Ooh, everybody's going to have to take a look at that because, you know, tell me, Barbara, that, you know, it's important to sort of understand our history a little bit of our quilts. You know, you have a passion for it, but, you know, maybe in a few words, why do you feel it's important that other people should have a passion for the quilters and quilts that were made before us?
Well, it's because of why we should be interested in our history, because it's important to know where we've been. And then one of the things I've always been interested in is that quilt history is women's history.
Mm-hmm. And
so, you know, to find out who designed these patterns and then to find out their lives and to find out that when they were designing them, say in 1910, it was one of the few jobs a woman could have. Or in 1930, if a woman wanted to work on a newspaper, she had a little ghetto. It was the needlework, cooking. Mm-hmm. So we need to know our history, and quilt patterns are a very tangible part of that.
You know, it looks like to me, you know, I've been following your blog, which is barbarabrackman.blogspot.com for quite a long time. And, you know, it looks to me like you have sort of started to meld your love of the history and the antique quilts and all your knowledge and sort of been doing your blog posts in that vein.
Yes.
Yes.
And I've been saying recently I was born to blog, but I didn't know it until about 3 years ago. I mean, I love the blog because it's self-publishing. I have no editor, no publishers say, I don't think anybody'd be interested in that. And it's very visual, and I'm a very visual person. So what I'm trying to do now is just pulling all the threads that I've been interested in for years and go on and on about things that I'm fascinated by and also get rid of my paper files. I have to, you know, so if you think 5,000 index cards is a lot, just think of how many file folders I have. So I thought if I could put them on the blog, kind of summarize it, it'll be up there in the cloud, and other people can find it.
We like the cloud. The cloud has all kinds of amazing things in it.
Yes, I love the image of the cloud. Yeah.
Right, right. Just floating above us with quilt blocks hanging in it. So and quilts. So tell me a little bit about one of your more recent posts, maybe one of your more favorite posts on your blog. You know, how do you accumulate the data to put out there? Is this stuff you already own?
Well, it's stuff some of it's stuff I've already done, but you know, one of the things I'm interested in this summer, I thought, well, for many years, my friend Mary Kay Walvogel and Bess Ramsey years ago noticed that a lot of the quilt patterns that we look at and think those are applique, if you look close, they're pieced.
Oh.
And so I have files on this, and I thought, well, you know, I think people need to know this. So some red and green quilts that are very applique looking, sometimes you can find seams. Mm-hmm. And so some examples are the rose tree, which is a an old pattern. And mm-hmm. in the 1840s, people were piecing them instead of appliquing them. Why, I cannot tell you. Mm-hmm. So I've been calling it show-off piecing, just to say, prove they could.
Yeah, just know, because they could, right.
So I communicated years ago with my friends in Tennessee, where it was very popular, and also Texas. And I have these files, and then I started, because of the Internet, I can go to the Quilt Index and kind of poke around and find many more examples. And I can go through eBay files or any online auction files and kind of see if anybody's been selling antique quilts with these mm-hmm. patterns. Mm-hmm. So this summer, that's my interest, is the show-off piecing. And the next one, which will be, I think, in a week or two, is borders. These are swag borders that are pieced.
Oh, swag borders that are pieced. That sounds incredible.
I'm not. So just imagine. Now, you know, I'm not going to take this up. I just want to point it out.
You just want to share it, so that's the good part.
I just want to share it, somebody can go, whoa, why did you do that? Just because
what we're going to do, Barbara, is we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, I want to talk about your fabric lines with Moda, and I'm going to go ahead and have you tell me a little bit about your 1812 War and Piecing blog, because you know, not only did you do one blog, but you've done two.
Yes, it's true.
It's true, yes. You do like to write. So we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Need a project you can start and finish in an evening, a weekend, or a couple of weeks? Pick up a copy of All Small, on sale now, featuring projects created with Moda Fabrics. We've assembled a collection of projects that are little in size, but big on style. Find All Small at your local quilt shop or newsstand today.
At Stash Books, we work to inspire you to use fabric to create a beautiful handmade lifestyle. We're passionate about inspirational designs, accurate instructions, and finding authors that you want to know and learn from. Visit StashBooks.com for a behind-the-scenes look at this season's new releases, including Modern Minimal by Elisa Haight Carlton, Modern Patchwork by Elizabeth Hartman, and much more. Sign up for our email list at StashBooks.com and get 20% off your next order.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we are here with author and historian Barbara Brackman. So, Barbara, at some point when, you know, you were collecting all this information about quilts and antique quilts, did you start buying antique quilts? Do you actually own some?
Yes, I do. I own about 50 quilts. Now, I'm trying to narrow it down and get a real focus on and keep my oldest ones. So I can justify buying new ones, you know, get rid of two newer ones and then buy one older one.
But well,
I learned years ago that books take up space, and so I started buying tops.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized tops take up space. So I started buying blocks. And then I started buying little swatches of fabric. So you can have a lot more swatches than you can have quilts.
And I bet those swatches have turned into your fabric lines with molding.
And that's how it started.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't design the fabric. You know, I can't really paint that well or even do digital design that well. Mm-hmm. But I'm a great archivist, and so I focus on certain periods. Right now,
right.
I have a new line of, called Metropolitan Fair, which is about the Civil War, and it's a line that is 1860s. So what I do is I have prints that I have taken from old blocks, and I recolor them,
mm-hmm.
try to have some authentic kind of natural dyes, and then some updated colors too.
Right. So the patterns and prints are all really coming from reproduction. So that you're going through your fabrics and you're finding awesome things that you know fit together, and then you're producing these lines that are fairly true to an older fabric.
Yes.
Yeah.
And usually about half of the colors will be authentic,
mm-hmm.
and then half of them will be updated. And one problem with that is that it's hard to combine the colors. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, they couldn't combine colors as easily as we do today.
Natural dyes
were much more stubborn.
So how do you come up with the amazing names? I love the names of your fabric lines. Metropolitan Fair. Where did that name come from?
I like just the way it sounds. Mm-hmm. But during the Civil War, women raised money because the government didn't feel that hospitals for injured soldiers was their department. And mm-hmm. so women, inspired by Florence Nightingale, started mm-hmm. hospitals. Mm-hmm. And they had to raise money to fund these, and it was one of the very few ways that women could acceptably raise money would be to have a charity fair.
Oh.
A Christmas bazaar. And they were
right.
often held at Christmas, just like ours. And mm-hmm. so they'd sell their needlework, and they'd cook meals, and they'd have performances, you know, tasteful performances. Well, they got bigger and bigger. And the biggest one was called the Metropolitan Fair, and it was in New York City in Union Square. And it lasted for a month. And tens of thousands of people went, and they raised so much money. I mean, millions, which is a lot of money back then. And so I loved the idea of the fair, of selling needlework to raise money, and I thought Metropolitan Fair was just a pretty combination of words.
I just love the story behind that. You know so much, Barbara. You just, you know, want to come sit with you and learn all these things.
Anytime, my dear. Well, I'm just a voracious reader. I love to read. It's my major entertainment. When I was younger, I remembered everything, and now that I'm older, I can read the same book twice. It's so much fun.
You're so funny.
looking for new books. So I do remember quite a bit, and I'm a good note taker.
Well, you also started. Tell me a little bit about your other blog called 1812 War and Peacing.
Well, that comes out of my reading. I mm-hmm. try every year to sort of set a goal for myself, a period of time that I'm going to read a lot of history of something I know nothing about. And about 3 years ago, maybe even longer, it was about the Regency in England, the kind of Jane Austen era when everyone was behaving mm-hmm. terribly scandalously except for Jane. And then last year I thought, well, what was happening in America at the same time, the federal period. So I set myself a goal to read about that, and I've been really fascinated. And then I thought, well, I want to know what kind of quilts they were making. And there isn't really much written about those very early quilts.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, it's the 200th anniversary of the War of 1812. It'd be really fun to start another blog.
Uh-huh.
And so every week for the past maybe 11 months, I've been posting about early quilts, which is fun for me because I'm cleaning out those files,
mm-hmm.
and also about to pick a woman every month and talk about her life because they led very different lives than we tend to think. Everything we know about 1810 is sort of filtered through a Victorian lens, and
right.
these people were pre-Victorian. They behaved quite a bit differently.
So how did they behave differently?
Well, you know, one of my interesting things is my favorite person that I found is a woman named Eliza Law, who was Michael Washington's granddaughter. And she got divorced. The minute her grandma passed away, she left her husband. And we don't know why. He sounded a little wacky. And to just find out that here's this person that had this fascinating life, maintained it on her own, and kind of dramatic life, and we never heard about her because she wasn't the good girl. We hear about her sisters. So I just love that idea that if we can kind of get over that Victorian perspective, we can find that they led lives a lot more like us. They had difficult marriages. They had great marriages. They had great romances, and they were pretty exciting people.
That's so cool. You know, I should read more, Barbara, because I want to know this stuff too. I think that's really, really neat.
It's not easy to find that information out.
No, I can imagine. I'll just read your blogs because you're finding it for us.
Cokie Roberts has written a really good book about the women who lived about that time, and that's why I sort of got a lot of my leads. She had she was interested in them too. It was a real popular book.
So you've also written pattern books with quilts in them. Some, you know, tell me about maybe one of your more recent ones.
Well, I have to tell you, I had a third blog there, the Civil War blog, because I just love to do them. But it was the 150th anniversary of the beginning of the Civil War last year, and I thought, well, it's a little entertainment for myself. Maybe I'll do a block of the week and 30 or 40 people might be interested and we can do a kind of a sampler quilt. Well, thousands of people started looking at it from all over the world. People who knew nothing about our Civil War just loved the idea of doing a block of the week. So my next book will be out in the winter, I think, and it's going to be a compilation of the quilts and the blocks that were made for this blog. So it's more Civil War information. And it's based on the Encyclopedia of Peace quilt patterns, the block base idea, in which I would find a story that I thought was interesting, and then I'd try and find a block name that would illustrate that particular story.
Now, was it really difficult to find the names? Because one of the most interesting things is the blocks have different names. I mean, multiple names. Like one block that we'll look at has multiple names. Is it difficult to determine what is most common, or do you really mind that?
Well, I sort of gave up trying to figure out what's most accurate, what's most common, because it changes with time. Like the pattern that we call Grandmother's Fire Garden, you know, I'm sure every listener knows what we're talking about. Well, hexagons, those quilts were made in 1840, but they called them Job's Troubles.
Which, oh, really?
It's just, things change, and so it's that's a fascinating thing to me, but I really at first I thought, well, there's a correct name or an oldest name, and those names sometimes I think were made up just like by people just like me who design patterns. They think, well, I need a good name here. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Well, and that happens now because people will take a block now that's a traditional block, do their own setting, their own coloration of it, and then give their pattern name something more, you know, maybe more fresh, more modern.
Yes. And that's what's been happening since 1880 when people started putting patterns in the newspaper. You're trying to sell patterns. You're trying to make people interested in what you're doing. And so you put a little flair on it.
Now, you, speaking of newspapers, I believe when the Kansas City Star decided to do, like, sort of pick up quilting again quite a few years back, wasn't your blocks one of the first, if not the first, that they were publishing?
Yes. At the Star, they started a new division in which they were going to start publishing books, and so they wanted to kind of emphasize their quilts history past, because the Kansas City Star is one of the greatest sources for patterns and pattern names from about 1930 to 1960. So they decided to revive it, and since I knew a lot about what they had done, they asked me to do a series, one a month for a year. And at first I thought, oh, good, I get to recycle some antique blocks, you know, and antique patterns. Right. And they said, oh, no, we want innovative patterns. And you have to design
We wanted new stuff, Barbara, new things.
Yes, it's always innovation. So that was really fun for me because I had never designed a block. That wasn't my job. My job was to put the ones everybody else designed in a nice, orderly fashion. So I did my own applique, and that was very exciting for me.
Yeah, I remember when that came out because everybody was very excited. It felt like, oh, wow, you know, quilting had kind of come back again, you know, we're in the newspaper.
Well, you know, and I know we're back in the newspaper, and the Star still does it once a month. I think yesterday in the Star I looked and there was a quilt pattern.
Ah, fabulous, fabulous. So when you go to a show, Barbara, I'm curious, if you know, go into a quilt show, what kind of quilts draw your personal attention? You know, what do you look for, or what, you know, just sort of strikes you now?
Well, I'm always looking for antique quilts that I haven't seen and antique patterns that I haven't seen or some fabulous use of fabric. Mm-hmm. But I also make quilts myself, and I use new fabrics, and I try to do innovative things. So I'm always looking for a new idea, too. Mm-hmm. I think I'm kind of an innovation junkie. And if somebody's using color in a new way or taking an old pattern and using it in a new way, I'm really excited about it. I love to see the modern quilt. You know, everybody says, what's a modern quilt? Well, a modern quilt is a new take on an old design.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that too. I love seeing, because they're really progressing, aren't they? They're sort of coming into their own. They've got a different voice to their quilts.
Yes. And just a new way of looking at big color.
Ah, very, very good. So I have just really enjoyed this. You know, I want to get in all of the things that you do. Let's see. We've got your blogs. Now tell us the three blogs that you have.
Well, then I have to say there's a fourth blog coming.
Oh.
Because I enjoyed the Civil War blog so much, I thought, well, I'll do another block of the week. Same idea, take traditional patterns and tell stories, but I didn't want to do something that was too American because I had international people. So I thought I'd take a subject that all of us are interested in, and that's the sort of a different war, the fight for votes for women, for women's suffrage around the world. So starting in September, I'm going to start a new block of the week that's called Grandmother's Choice. And it tells the story of how women got the vote and other rights.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds really good. I like that.
And there's a whole area there. There's a lot of history I knew nothing about. And so I've been reading a lot.
Cool. This is going to be so much fun. Yeah. Poking around on the internet, finding new things. Yeah. Well, Barbara, I have enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for being on.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
We're going to take a little break here at American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and then we'll come right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com. Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, Hello Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on Watch Videos.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today we're taking a dip into quilt history. Barbara Brackman just gave us a lot of info about things that she has done, and now I am so excited to have Paula Golden on the show. Paula is the current president of the Virginia Quilt Museum, and if you don't know, I live in Virginia, so I'm very excited that we have our own quilt museum. Paula is also a designer, a fabulous designer and teacher in her own right, plus this amazing job as being president of the Virginia Quilt Museum. So, Paula, I am so happy to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to have this opportunity to share a little bit about the Virginia Quilt Museum.
The museum is run by volunteers, including yourself, who you have like a board of volunteers that run this whole place. That's incredible.
Well, actually, we have our director, assistant director, and two part-time people who actually take care of the day-to-day running of the museum. But the board and the people who work in the museum to greet visitors are all volunteers.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is just. I just love the museum. It's not close enough to me. Could we move it? You know, over by my neighborhood. So.
That was one of the things, because Virginia is an unusually shaped state geographically when you go to the perimeters of the state, and trying to find a spot that was exactly in the middle of it was really difficult, because I agreed, because I live in Blacksburg, and, you know, the museum is located in the middle of the Shenandoah Valley in lovely Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Right, so we're probably both about equal distances from it, you and I. I'm north of it, and you're south of it.
Exactly, and I think that was what the organizers had in mind.
Could you tell me just a little backstory, you know, how long has the museum been open, you know, how did it start? Because there isn't a credible story here.
Exactly. Now, the museum opened its doors on August 25th in 1995, and in March of 2000, it was actually designated the official quilt museum of the Commonwealth.
That's fabulous. Yay, us.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's yay for Virginia to have it as our official museum. That's really, really wonderful.
Exactly, because it's only one of, I believe, 7 or 8 quilt museums in the entire United States. So to have a quilt museum in Virginia is such an honor, I think, and really shows the importance of quilts, their story, and their history, and how they take part in all of our lives on many different levels, from keeping us warm to what was going on historically at any given time period.
So who had the vision, and were you part of the original group that work to bring this museum to happen, to be for real?
Oh, I wish I had. Actually, it was the brainchild of Joan Knight and Susie Williams, and it was inspired by the passion that they saw for quilts in Virginia during the documentation days. And the documentation days took place in the 1980s and 1990s and were sponsored by the Virginia Consortium of Quilters, which is our state guild, and the museum was actually started with seed money from VCQ.
I
wish I had been involved, but, you know, I didn't show up until 2 or 3 years later.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And they, this was all done with money that was raised, the entire museum. There wasn't, they didn't have any government sponsorship.
Absolutely not. And we are a nonprofit organization. We are supported by membership and donations. We have two current fund development ideas going. One is an online silent auction, which starts in August on benefit bidding. and a beautiful raffle quilt made by the Old Dominion Applique Society and hand-quilted by Gail Lott. Mm-hmm. However, we are always looking for sponsors and donors, as many other art nonprofit organizations. So please join the museum, besides having wonderful exhibits at your fingertips.
Yeah, it's a really, really nice museum. It's in a house. It was the house donated or did they purchase it? Because it's not like built for a museum. It's a house that was already in the town of Harrisonburg.
Correct. The museum is housed in the Warren Fipe House on South Main Street in Harrisonburg. It was at first loaned to the Virginia Quilt Museum Incorporated and then sold to the museum for a dollar, which is a wonderful opportunity. Mm-hmm. The home was completed in 1856 and is a beautiful example of the architecture of the time with 12-foot high ceilings, a gorgeous center hall staircase, parquet floors, and some beautiful Victorian fireplaces. So it allows for quilts to be exhibited in a very beautiful manner. Sometimes it poses a little bit of a challenge to the exact placement of the quilts, but the exhibit committee and the staff have worked really hard to allow the quilts and the building itself to balance each other. So I hope everybody enjoys it when they come to visit.
Yeah, it is really wonderful. I love the big front room where you have like the main exhibits. It's a nice display area. It's really nicely done. What type of things are owned by the Virginia Quilt Museum? You have quilts. Do they all have to be from Virginia?
The mission statement of the Virginia Quilt Museum says that the mission statement is to support and nurture the art of and history of quilt making in Virginia. So the majority of the quilts in the permanent collection are made or attributed to having been made in Virginia. There are also patterns, sewing implements, some housewives, sewing machines, including some that were made by James Edward Allen Gibbs of the sewing machine company Wilcox and Gibbs, and he lived just down the road from Harrisonburg in Racine, Virginia.
Oh, wow.
So it's to me that we have a Virginia inventor of the sewing machine is really pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that a lot. You have like on the two floors to this building. So are there permanent displays in one area of the museum?
The exhibits in the main floor include rotating exhibits, and we have three exhibits per year. We also have a room, the Civil War room, that talks about the woman's life on the home front during the Civil War, and we have quilts from that time period there. Mm-hmm. On the second floor, we always have quilts from the permanent collection on exhibit, and they may be the same style or same subject matter of those that are on a traveling exhibit on the first floor. We also have a reference library and a room of sewing machines of different time periods. So,
neat.
Something for everybody.
Something for everybody. Yeah, tell me about one of the quilts. We talked ahead of time, and one of the applique quilts, because of course I love applique, so I want to talk about that one. Is a quilt called the Shenandoah Valley Botanical Album. And it's got, 25 amazing sort of floral blocks with rainbows in the center. I just thought this was incredible. What do you know about that quilt?
Well, we know that it is comprised of the 25 applique blocks, many of which appear to be original designs featuring flowers that grew in Rockingham County, Virginia. Each block contains an ink inscription identifying the flowers. In the center are two folk art-style blocks. In the one you mentioned featuring two rainbows, mm-hmm. crescent moon, star and sun, and the other is labeled Tree of Liberty, United States. It's the is absolutely exquisite.
That's an interesting name. That's like, looks like big, like a lollipop tree to me. It's got like great big circles.
It's fascinating. actually, this quilt is currently on display at the American Textile History Museum in Lowell, Massachusetts, and is part of their exhibit, Homefront and Battlefield, Quilts and the Context in the Civil War. So we are delighted that we were able to share part of this story that will be traveling around the United States.
Oh, that's really nice. Yeah, so do you do that often? Does the museum, you know, switch quilts with other museums or just lend them out?
Actually, this is something that we have had the opportunity to do twice. We also have an 1820 Strippy quilt that is on loan to the National Quilt Museum in Paducah. And, you know, when we loan a quilt, it needs to be credible institution, certain loan criteria, insurance, exhibit areas almost meet a certain standard.
Right. It's a big deal to send them out because they're very precious and unique. And
Yes.
And
so, you know, they're not just loans, you know, out here and there, but we are delighted to be able to have the opportunity and look forward to being able to have quilts from other institutions be shared with us also.
Tell me, there's a couple of quilt books with Virginia quilts. We have about a minute until the break. Maybe you could tell me about the books with Virginia quilts in them.
Okay. There are two books with Virginia's quilts. Both are for purchase at the museum store. The first book, the Virginia Quilt Museum, features quilts from the museum's early collection. And the second, the Quilts of Virginia, 1607 to 1899, was written by the Virginia Consortium of Quilters and features quilts from the documentations done in the 1980s, as well as quilts by all of the spouses of the eight presidents born in Virginia. The first documented quilt pattern, referred to in 1876 in correspondence, the Apple Pie Ridge, and a lot of interesting information about the geology, bit about the general history of Virginia and how the settlement of Virginia played a role in the different styles from the different time periods. I'm very proud to have been involved with that book. It's
a great book. It's a great book for a lot of wonderful details and stories, like Barbara Brackman was talking about. You know, the stories behind the quilts is what is totally fascinating to me. Hey, Paula, we're going to take a little break.
Okay.
And then when we come back, I want you to tell me a little bit about the chintz quilt that is a museum quilt. And then we'll talk about current exhibits and then a little bit about your personal work.
Sounds good. All right. Look forward to chatting with you in a minute.
We'll be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.
Free stuff! Find out about our newest online sweepstakes and contests and how you can enter at allpeoplequilt.com/promos.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, hello, Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
We're listening to you. Comment on today's show and tell us your ideas for future shows. Visit the contact page on our website, allpeoplequilt.com. Now, back to the show. Here's Pat.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm talking to Paula Golden, the current president of the Virginia Quilt Museum. So, Paula, you have another fabulous quilt that you and I chatted about in advance, which is a chintz medallion. Tell me about this quilt.
Oh, this is an exquisite quilt made by Jane Weekly Leach. It is typical of many Maryland and Virginia quilts circa 1800 that have a broidery purse center surrounded by chintz borders. The center square is, an applique tree of life, and gorgeous, you know, how it was cut out and then appliqued in place.
And that's really tedious work. Because it looks to me like it's probably very finely cut out the image from the fabric and then applique down.
It is. You know, the stitches around the broidery purse or Persian applique support the center. And, you know, when you think of how old that quilt is, to have it in, you know, such a good condition is a testament to the workmanship that Jane did.
Yeah, and there's actually a fabulous sort of red and cream, I'm only looking at a photo, but red and cream half-square triangles then that sort of surround that, and then has another border and then another border.
It is. It's, you know, the borders are a 6-inch strip of blue background of a glazed chintz and then a 12-inch piece border of larger brown print fabrics and a small square of light blue background chintz, you know, with white triangles. It just keeps going and going, and it's a beautiful quilt. If I can mention, we have an agreement with Cranston Fabrics to have reproduction fabrics based on quilts in the Virginia Quilt Museum's collection, and one is coming out this summer. And
that's fabulous.
So it's very exciting.
Yes, very exciting. People who love reproduction fabrics, you know, they're always on the hunt, aren't they, for it?
Exactly. And to be able to, reproduce or attempt to reproduce or use it as a jumping off point for a new style quilt is always exciting. One thing that has always impressed me about the quilts from the 1800s is their workmanship. Mm-hmm. The tiny stitching, the double rows of quilting lines, and they're delightful to watch, even, you know, to view now.
Tell me a little bit about the current exhibits for the summer of 2012, maybe into the fall for the Virginia Quilt Museum.
Okay, the current exhibit features the quilts made by and in the collection of Hazel Carter. Hazel Carter originally hails from the Midwest, but has been in Virginia for 35 years, so I hope that Virginia can claim her, you know, as a daughter. But Hazel is the founder of the Quilters Hall of Fame. She has been instrumental in mentoring many national and internationally renowned teachers. She held the first quilting conference ever in the United States, the Continental Quilting Congress. And it's interesting just to watch time progress through the quilts in her collection. In September, Los Helios will debut, and those quilts are from California, and they are made by migrant farm workers. So very important and should be a very interesting exhibit, especially when you consider how much of Virginia is still in farmland.
Right, right. That's very, I like that. This sounds good. And people can go to your website for the museum is vaquiltmuseum, all one word, .org, vaquiltmuseum.org. And so you have the exhibits and all the different things that are available. Now,
we
Holly,
also have
go ahead.
Membership information on the website where you can download a membership form, and the exhibits are on the website, and we hope we are planning to have quilts from the museum's collection up on the website next summer. That people can do research and see, you know, what they're going to see when they come to visit the museum.
Oh, that's nice. That'll be a nice addition. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're very fortunate to have that in our future. So.
In your future. Very good. So, Paula, you yourself are an amazing quilter. And I would like to tell people your website, which is paulagolden.com. Tell me a little bit about the style quilt that you like to personally make.
I've been thinking long and hard about your question, and all I could come up with is eclectic. It really isn't a style at all, but, you know, it's... There are so many fascinating things about quilt making, from intricate piecework to applique, that I think one would need to live about four lifetimes to be able to explore all of them. And
I agree. At least four lifetimes.
Yes, that would be good. I love fabric. I love touching it. I love playing with it, seeing the possibilities. I have taken some printmaking courses as part of my graduate studies, and all of a sudden the idea of taking digital body images, you know, from different healthcare concerns that I may have had, it's like, may I have a disc of what, the test you just did? I'd like to print it on fabric. And interesting responses, but you know, if you can't take your body's skeleton and print it someplace, then nobody else should be able to either. But playing with different options.
Well, you enjoy everything from Hawaiian quilting to, you know, printing your, you know, x-rays onto fabric. I mean, it's just, you go the whole realm of interest. And how long have you personally been out teaching quilting?
I have been teaching for about 25 years, and I love to teach traditional quilt making, but I think my most fun part is talking about creativity and working with quilt makers who feel, oh, I'm not creative. Well, we're all creative. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we sing a song, you know, we juggle children, we juggle caregiving for our community, our parents, you know, how we get everything done in the same given 24-hour period shows creativity. You know, we're all creative. And sometimes when we're in the midst of working outside the home and caring for family members or working inside the home and getting through a day, sometimes the confidence gets lost in our innate ability, and creativity workshops are loads of fun, you know, and seeing somebody go, well, I could do that. Mm-hmm, it's like, mm-hmm. Of course you could, but somehow the realization has to come from within, and watching the baby steps get taken, you know, by individuals is, you know, sometimes they're giant steps, but
right.
Sometimes it's just the door opening, and then to meet up with a former student years down the road and go, wow, look what they accomplished. You know, it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with what they honored about themselves and mm-hmm. and created. And I'm always, I'm so impressed, you know, in my heart.
You teach a lot. You go out on the road and teach a lot of places. Like on your website, you have a class schedule and your classes. What is one of your favorite classes to teach? That's a hard one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because the first quilting class I ever took was when my husband was stationed in Hawaii, and the quilt instructor, Auntie Betsy Leakey, who has since passed on, kept saying, you have to create a design that is original, you know, using the paper folded technique that is part of traditional Hawaiian design. And I was 28 at the time, and I was like, I don't have a story. And she kept going, everybody has a story. You know, draw and cut out. And, you know, I remember being having maybe a low frustration level at that time. But her words, you know, that every quilt has a story. So anyway, finding focus would be my most favorite. And then I think Hawaiian quilting, because working with students to find their story and how can you interpret it in a quilt design, whether you go ahead and make the quilt or not, that step of going, yes, I can do this, is so much fun. And then drafting mariner's compasses.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, drafting a mariner's compass, something very easy, right? It's actually not that hard. I've done it. It's
It's three steps, and I figure if I can do it, actually anybody can do it, because it is. It's three steps, and we can all do it. And it's not, it is, it depends on how intricate you make it, but, you know, once you draft, you don't have to make it.
Right, right. And if you, and you have also the great honor of being, I think it's 2001 Teacher of the Year.
Yes.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. That was quite a surprise and still continues to be very much an honor for me.
Yeah, this was an award given by the Professional Quilter Organization. So which votes, people vote, your students vote. They write in and say they've taken a workshop from you, and it was amazing. So that's a great.
I was honored. And then this past year, Willow Bend Creations had an online event, Inspired to Quilt, for inspiring teachers, and I was honored to be included in that, and I just, it comes out of left field for me, and that again was very much an honor.
Well, Paula, this has been so wonderful to have you on to talk about the Virginia Quilt Museum and your personal work, because the museum is just part of your life. You're also a very, very busy designer and teacher.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity of being able to talk a little bit about the Virginia Quilt Museum, which is just a short distance off of Interstate 81 in the Shenandoah Valley. And, you know, it's dear to my heart, and I think dear to a lot of us who appreciate the stories that quilts can tell and be part of our own story.
Well, thank you, Paula. This has been American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us online at allpeoplequilt.com. We'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.